You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Charlie Zimmerman. Autism is heavily associated with children, particularly boys. But autism doesn't go away when someone turns 18, nor does the opportunity for a previously undiagnosed person to finally receive a diagnosis. As Marion Shambari knows, adult autism diagnoses can be difficult to obtain, owing to a lack of providers offering adult evaluations and stereotyped views of what autism looks like, but they can be truly transformative. Here's our interview with Marion about her book, A Little Less Broken, How an Autism Diagnosis Finally Made Me Whole.
Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Marion Shambari, author of A Little Less Broken, How an Autism Diagnosis Finally Made Me Whole. Welcome to the Exchange, Marion.
Thank you for having me, Mike. I'm happy to be here.
So this title, it's really intriguing. What led you to write this book?
Yeah, so when I was 34, I found out that I was autistic, which is not usually the age people learn that they're autistic. Usually you associate autism with children, but that diagnosis suddenly allowed me to put all the puzzle pieces of my life together. By the time I was 34, I'd been diagnosed with anxiety, depression, OCD, Tourette's, sensory processing disorder, but none of them really made a lot of sense, and none of the quote-unquote cures fixed me. And it wasn't until I got that diagnosis that I could actually improve my life and make accommodations for myself, because it turns out I wasn't weird or deficient or moody or sensitive or broken. I was just autistic. And so I wrote an essay about this late-in-life autism diagnosis a couple of years ago, and the response to the essay was incredible. It turns out that I wasn't alone, and I had never been alone. Hundreds of autistic people, mostly women, got in touch with me. Women in their 30s, 40s, 50s, who reached out because they'd been told at some point that they were broken. Oh, you're just anxious. You need to try harder. You need to make more friends. Why are you doing those weird movements? Why don't you have a social life? And it turns out that they were also autistic, and they didn't find out until much later in life. And so once I realized that it wasn't just me that had this experience, once I could see all the women, not just autistic women, but women with ADHD, OCD, even endometriosis, who had also felt alienated and dismissed by the medical system and told that they were, quote unquote, just anxious, the autism diagnosis or the ADHD diagnosis helps them improve their lives in leaps and bounds. And so that's when I realized that there was so much more to the story than what I could write in 800 words. And that's when I ended up writing the book, A Little Less Broken.
Well, throughout all of these challenges that you've had, you've become a prolific writer. So tell me about your background and some of the articles you've written, and talk about Cup of Joe.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. I write mostly personal essays. It's funny because writing has always felt like a way to insert myself into the world, because I often am making weird choices in my life. So I wrote an essay about why my daughter has my last name and not my husband's last name, her father's last name. I wrote an essay about my gender swapped engagement photos, or God, what else have I written about? Quirky home style. And looking back on it now through the lens of this autism diagnosis, my writing makes a lot more sense to me too. But I've been writing my whole life. Both my parents are writers. And I had never really thought about writing a book until this one, because most of my writing has been short form. So I've written for the New York Times and Cosmopolitan and Good Housekeeping, just about kind of little things, friendship, family, sometimes money. My husband and I don't share money, and that seems to weird people out. So I wrote an essay about that for Marie Claire. And Cup of Joe is a new place that I've started writing for. It's actually just an amazing website. You could call it a lifestyle website. It's hugely popular, primarily with women. But the editor features a lot of really beautiful essays about all sorts of things that are really meaningful, not just fashion and makeup. It's like women sharing about divorce and how hard it is to raise children and pregnancy loss. And so I've started writing quite a bit for the editor, Joanna, about all sorts of things. I think one of my favorite things I wrote for her recently was about how I've gotten back into singing as an adult and the joy of kind of rediscovering your childhood hobbies. So my beat is kind of all over the place, actually.
So it doesn't seem like autism has really stopped you from living your best life, but what is autism and how is it diagnosed?
Yeah, autism is a collection of related neurological disorders or conditions. So it's not just one thing. I cannot list all of them off the top of my head, but our stereotype of what autism looks like is someone like Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man, right? Who's a savant and wildly brilliant, but very awkward or incapable of taking care of himself. But that's just kind of one side of it. It can look like all sorts of things. And it's actually a little hard to categorize in a way that makes sense to people who aren't living it. But I kind of like to explain it. We use the word spectrum a lot, but I prefer to talk about it as sort of a rainbow because if that visual makes sense to people. Because when we use the word spectrum, we think about, oh, you can be on the high end of the spectrum or the low end of the spectrum. You're either very autistic or a little autistic. So like Rain Man would be on one side and I would be on the other, right? Because I have a family and I own a home and I have a job, right? But that's not the right way to think about it. If we think about a rainbow, we think about all the different colors on the rainbow. And so red might be repetitive behaviors. So that's one symptom of autism. You don't need to have all of them. But with repetitive behaviors, we're used to seeing, let's say, a seven-year-old boy who flaps his hands a lot. And you think, oh, that boy is autistic. But for someone like me, I never flap my hands. But what I do is I lock my knees when I walk. And I roll my neck all the time, and I blink very hard and very fast, and I flare my nostrils. So those are my repetitive behaviors. And you might look at me and think, oh, that's someone who has tics, right? That's what I thought for a long time, that I just had these tics. And the yellow of the rainbow might be social communication, right? Can you read what somebody else is trying to say through their facial expressions and their body language? Can you have a conversation with them, or do you just talk without letting them get a word in? Or do you talk using movie quotes? These are a lot of the kind of really common symptoms of autism. And so the rainbow kind of goes on like that. And there's this collection of these symptoms, and you need to have a certain number of them in order to be considered autistic. And so for adults, the testing is a little bit different, because as children, the children that get diagnosed tend to be, and I'm making a huge generalization, they tend to be quote unquote more severe, and that's why they get diagnosed earlier, because it's much harder to hide. Right. But for women and girls and non-binary people and people of color, it tends to be harder to diagnose us because we're constantly having to mask in the world. We're constantly having to pretend to be someone we're not. White boys tend to not have to deal with this. And so when we get diagnosed as adults, the testing criteria is technically the same, but the process is a little bit different. So for me, I went to a specialist who specializes in masked autistic adults.
Let's get into that in just 1 second.
Yes, I can talk and talk, so thank you for interrupting me.
I want you to explain this specialist. I'm talking with Marion Shambari, author of A Little Less Broken: How an Autism Diagnosis Finally Made Me Whole. Now, you were talking about the rainbow of various different symptoms, and you have to have a sufficient amount of those symptoms in order to have a diagnosis as autistic. Is that correct?
Exactly.
And you went to a specialist.
I did. Would you like me to talk about that specialist?
What happened?
So I found a woman who specializes in masked autistic presentation. And she did three Zoom interviews with me. So it was all done virtually. And I had to complete probably about 50 pages worth of surveys. I think it was 5 tests overall. And those tests were everything from childhood behaviors to the way that I process sensory information to how I communicate socially. And I filled out those surveys and she reviewed them. And then she did 2 hour-long Zoom observational interviews where she kind of watched me, my repetitive behaviors and my movements, the way that I communicated, my ability to make eye contact, and she kind of put them all together and kind of gave me a are you autistic or are you not autistic? And the answer was yes.
So once you get a diagnosis that you are autistic, what does that mean? How does that affect you? How does it make your decisions different?
It changes all my decisions. A diagnosis can help in kind of two big buckets. The first is actual accommodations that other people can give you. So it can be very important if you're still in school or if you're working, right? Because if you have an autism diagnosis, you can get accommodations at work, which is hugely, hugely important to allow autistic people the dignity of work. I didn't need those because I work for myself and I'm no longer in school. What the diagnosis did for me was allowed me to make accommodations for myself. So I'm a parent and I have a 7-year-old, and the sensory experience of being a parent is unbearable for me. Children make a lot of noise. They have a lot of chaotic demands. Their mood switches all the time. They touch you a lot, and I would tend to explode at my daughter a lot, which isn't fair for her and is a terrible way to raise a child, but I couldn't help it, really. And with the autism diagnosis, it really helped me realize that this was not a thing I could control, right? I am not capable of going to story time at the library. That's too much noise, too many bright lights. I can't go to something like Disneyland. And once I could accept the things I was not able to change, I could make those accommodations for myself. I could say, okay, Elliot, who's my husband, you are taking June to Disneyland and I am staying home by myself. Or June is making a ton of noise. I'm going to need to put in my earplugs. I will never be able to handle the amount of noise that she makes. And so I need to take myself out of the situation. And so, almost overnight, Mike, that stuff changed completely. Like, wow. I stopped exploding at my daughter. I don't think I've yelled at her in 3 years, which is exactly when I got my diagnosis, because I can remove myself from the situations that were causing me to have these meltdowns, essentially. And that's been the biggest change, is my relationship with my daughter, but also my husband, the people I work with, my parents. It's been life-changing.
Well, that makes sense. So no concerts.
Yeah. Oh, my God. No concerts.
But it makes sense that once you have an understanding of how you move and feel comfortable in the world and what your boundaries are, it affects your decisions and it helps others around you interact with you better.
Exactly.
So what are some of the challenges that doctors face in accurately diagnosing autism, particularly, and you mentioned people of color and women?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of challenges, and I'm not a doctor, so I don't know what it's like to see patient after patient after patient and feel like you understand something and then realize maybe the studies were biased or wrong. I think where it gets particularly tricky is that we're still kind of in the infancy of understanding the breadth of autism, if that makes sense. So there's still so much we don't know. We don't know what causes it. There's no quote unquote cure. There's no blood test or brain scan that can tell you if someone is autistic. And so it really is kind of a subjective test. And the tests themselves were diagnosed for children. So the people that do specialize usually are autistic themselves, or have autistic children and so have like a deep passion for doing this work. A lot of them have had to write their own tests to get to the answer. And so it is a little subjective. It is still in its infancy. And I think, I hope that in the next 10 years or so, we'll have a lot more clarity on what that looks like. But I am hopeful that things will start to change, and that a lot of the doctors and the psychiatrists that I've spoken to since writing this book are really excited about autistic people who are coming out with their stories, and they're reading a lot of them and referring them to their patients. And so I think the best thing that medical professionals can do in these situations is be talking to more autistic people. And the ones that are having an easier time identifying this kind of masked presentation.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. We'll have to take a short break, but we'll be right back with more from Marion Shambari, author of A Little Less Broken, how an autism diagnosis finally made me whole. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Marian Shimbari, author of A Little Less Broken, How an Autism Diagnosis Finally Made Me Whole. So Marian, too often patients have to be their own advocate to get the kind of quality care that they need. How was your experience?
Yeah, not great. I tell a story in the book about getting diagnosed with endometriosis after 10 years. And it really mirrored my experience getting diagnosed autistic, because with endometriosis, which is like a reproductive condition that many, many, many women have, I went to doctor after doctor after doctor after doctor trying to figure out why I was in constant pain. And they wanted to diagnose me with everything except endometriosis. There's not a ton of research that's been done on women. We tend to not care so much about women's health. And I guess I got really lucky in that I don't get defeated easily. And so when one doctor told me, oh, you probably have a kidney infection, let's do this weekend long kidney test, I could kind of be like, yeah, I don't think that's the problem. So I'm going to find a different doctor. And I eventually did find a doctor who actually performed a surgery and removed the endometriosis, thus removing my pain. And so with autism, I had a very similar experience in that when I first realized, oh, I bet I'm autistic, I went to my psychiatrist at the time and kind of tentatively brought it up with her. And she said, oh, no, there's absolutely no way you're autistic. You're charming and you have a family. Autistic people have a very hard time living a normal life, which, of course, in hindsight is crazy because no one says this to men, right? No one says this to Elon Musk, who is autistic and also has a family. And I wouldn't say he's charming, but, you know, he has a business and a home. People only say this to women. And so at first, I felt really like, I'm an idiot. The doctor knows more than me. I shouldn't be getting my information off the internet, right? Like all the things that you hear doctors say. And I felt defeated for about 2 or 3 days. And then I started reading more stories from autistic women and was essentially like, I don't believe her. There has to be someone who knows more than her. But I didn't know where to look. And so I started calling clinics in my area in Portland, Oregon, and I called probably every single clinic in Portland that specializes in autistic children. And every single one of them had no idea what I was talking about. What? You want an autism diagnosis for an adult? No, we don't do that. And one of them even hung up on me. So it was very hard to find someone who specialized in autism that's diagnosed later in life. But really, the way that I did eventually find the resources was through other autistic women. And I asked a ton of people, and I joined support groups, and I got a list of names of primarily autistic doctors who specialize in this kind of mass presentation. And I very quickly found someone who was amazing, who took me seriously, who trusted that I knew my own body, who had done the research, who'd been doing this for 30 years, who was able to diagnose me. But I got very lucky. My insurance did not cover it, so it was expensive, but I had the resources to pay for it. And many, many, many autistic people do not. And so it's still a huge problem trying to get doctors to take you seriously.
Well, you know, earlier in our conversation, you mentioned the movie Rain Man. And I just finished a few months ago watching a series called Atypical with my family, particularly with my younger boys. And it was about a character, a young boy and his family, and he was what they called on the spectrum. He was autistic, but he was functional, but the family had to adjust around him, and so did his friendship circles and his employers and so on and so forth. I learned a lot through that, but I know that media doesn't always portray autism as it is in real life. What's the difference?
Yeah, I haven't seen Atypical, so I really don't know anything about it. There are two shows that do this extremely well and very beautifully. One is a show called Everything's Going to Be Okay, or Everything's Gonna Be Okay, by creator Josh Thomas, who is autistic, and there are autistic women on the show who are autistic in real life. And to me, that's the difference. Is there an autistic person playing this character? Or are there at least autistic people in the writer's room? So I truly don't know anything about Atypical. It's very possible that there were autistic writers creating that show. But I really love reading and watching content that was created by autistic people. Hannah Gadsby is another one. So one of the first aha moments I had was watching Hannah at their San Francisco live show, where they talk about their late-in-life autism diagnosis. And as they're talking, I felt this wave of familiarity. And of course, you know, a year later, I'd get my own diagnosis. But for me, I think autism is such a nuanced condition that I kind of really only trust people who are autistic themselves to portray it accurately.
So how does autism get portrayed among journalists and news media?
Oh, I saw this very funny meme the other day. I wish I could quote it exactly, but it was like, one, the way autism is portrayed in the news is like a child being brilliant at math, and like the mother understands that the child will never love her the way she wants to be loved, but he can do math, and math is the way that he shows his love. And meanwhile, autistic people are like, it is too hot for the coat that I never take off. So like, I wish that autism were portrayed like a little more like funnily, because it is sometimes ridiculous. Like, I'm very warm right now, but I have 17 layers on just because I need that like tight sensation around my body. And so I think it's always portrayed as this like, either this like devastating thing for some family. And again, I don't want to say that it's, I can't speak as a parent of an autistic child because I'm not, but the representation we get is usually of a parent who's devastated because they have an autistic kid who isn't the child that they wish they had, or it's portrayed as some like savant-like gift, and there's just not a lot of wiggle room or a lot of nuance in the portrayals, and definitely very, very little showing anyone except for white boys. And so I wish there were more of that. The New York Times has done a couple pieces about women getting diagnosed late in life, which I really appreciate. But there's also, I think lately, I've seen a lot of news about like teens diagnosing themselves with mental health disorders on TikTok. And it's shown in this real patronizing kind of way. Like, people who get information about their health online or through other people are somehow stupid or ill-informed. And I really wish that there was also more nuance in those conversations, because when doctors are constantly dismissing you, where else are you supposed to get your information? How else are we supposed to know that very little research was done on women? We need to be able to research our own health ourselves. Not saying that we don't need the support of doctors, but I get a little irritated by some of the conversations that have been happening lately when people like me come forward saying, hey, I was just diagnosed with autism. There's a lot of dismissal that's been happening by some journalists, which makes me irritated, but that is a longer rant for another day.
So, Marion, we all meet people all the time that are new to our lives, and I'm sure that happens with you as well. How does your diagnosis and the fact that you now know what's happening with your body and with your environment, how does that help you introduce new people into your environment, into your life?
With great difficulty. I think it's tricky because I've made some new friends since my diagnosis, and those friendships are much easier for me to manage because they know I'm autistic. So if we go out to dinner, it has to be at like a non-crowded, quiet restaurant that doesn't play loud music, and they know that after an hour, I'm going to need to leave. And it's been amazing. Just I've been able to make like much deeper friendships because of this, because I'm not pretending to be someone I'm not, and I'm not forcing myself to be in uncomfortable situations. On the flip side, though, constantly having to disclose that I'm autistic is tricky, because sometimes I don't want to have a whole conversation about the spectrum and the rainbow and, no, we're not all a little bit autistic. It's actually like a very real condition, and just because you're awkward doesn't mean you're autistic. So I'm constantly having to navigate it and trying to learn when to disclose and when not to disclose. Now that I have a book about it, I am disclosing less because people know when they meet me. But yeah, I think for the most part, it's been mostly positive. I'd say the relationship benefits post-diagnosis have been the best part. But yeah, sometimes it's a little complicated too.
I'm talking with Marion Shimbari, author of A Little Less Broken: How an Autism Diagnosis Finally Made Me Whole. So you mentioned your book. Are you going on book tours? Are you surrounding yourself with fans who want your autograph? Are you speaking? What's happening?
Yeah, it's so funny. I'm on tour right now. I'm sitting in my childhood bedroom at my parents' house because I had an event last night at like my hometown bookstore. So I'm on a 6-city tour. I'm in Connecticut right now. I'll be in North Carolina tomorrow and then New York on Saturday. I've done 4 events so far. And I am so past the point of exhaustion. I think I'm actually kind of blacked out right now. I have no idea if I will remember this conversation. And it's been amazing because there's something so liberating about the clear rules of being on tour. I have a schedule in a Google Doc and I know exactly where I need to be. My food is taken care of. I have rides from point A to point B. I don't have to navigate really anything about my life right now. My publisher has done that for me. And when I show up at an event, I sit in front of people and someone asks me questions. I don't have to, this is not like even just talking to you right now. I don't need to ask you a bunch of questions. I don't need to navigate when to talk and when to be quiet. The rules are very clear to me. So I've actually really enjoyed being on tour more than I enjoy being at a bar with like a group of friends. That I will run out of the bar crying. But this feels doable. That said, I am going to need to nap for 100 years when I get home because it is a lot of stimulation, a lot of social interaction. But for the most part, the people who are coming to these events are artistic people. And I've heard some really beautiful stories from folks, even just like afterwards, they come up to me. This woman came up to me the other day, in her 40s, and she said, I just got diagnosed and I have felt alone my entire life. And I feel like your book is finally going to be the thing that keeps me company. And how is that not like fueling, you know, like to be able to connect with these people who feel the same way that I felt for decades? I would go to 100 cities if it meant being able to connect with people like this, because I feel like for both of us, our masks were down and we didn't have to look at each other in the eye. We could look at the ground. We could say exactly what we felt. I could tell the audience, yeah, I'm tired now. I don't want to sign any more books, or I'm going to go and I'm going to get in bed and I'm going to eat cheese and watch TV. And I don't have to pretend to be something that I'm not. So I am genuinely loving it, and I'm so exhausted.
There's a sense of freedom in that.
Yes.
What advice would you give to writers and journalists who struggle with some of the same challenges you faced?
The writing part or the autistic part?
Both.
The writing part, I have a great tip, but it's unhinged and very autistic, and only neurodivergent people will understand it. But I didn't know how to write a book. I'd never written a book before. And suddenly I have a year to write an entire book. And all the classes that I'd taken were so generic. I really needed specifics. Like literally, how many sentences, where do I put sentences about my feelings and where do I put sentences about this thing? And I could not figure out how to learn it. So I taught it to myself. I had a Kindle and I read on a Kindle. And I have a collection of all the sentences that I've highlighted on my Kindle. And I have 9,181 sentences highlighted. And I spent the first couple months organizing all of those sentences into categories. I've been highlighting. This is a 10-year process. I did not highlight these in a day. I like highlighting.
Okay.
So I took all the sentences and I exported them to a Google spreadsheet. And then I organized them into categories. So I have 18 different categories. Dialogue. How to explain physical sensations, smell, taste, visual descriptions, time summaries, and that taught me how to write the book. So this is really advice only for a very specific person, and I'm not saying go off and make an unhinged Google spreadsheet, but I will say that if you're neurodivergent and like the typical career or writing advice just doesn't resonate with you, remember that neurotypical people probably created that advice, and you might need to very much color outside of the lines to kind of teach yourself how to do a new thing. I personally found my spreadsheet incredible and so helpful, and it is now my most prized possession. I cannot write without it.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Thank you for joining The Exchange, Marian, and for a fascinating conversation.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
My guest has been Marian Shambari, author of A Little Less Broken, How an Autism Diagnosis Finally Made Me Whole. I'm Mike Green.